The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1051. It's the 25th of April, 2018. Don't forget, if I say don't forget, you may not even know, but we have launched a new podcast series called Business Lives. And now you can get it at voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. And it features interviews with high-profile guests from the world of business. And like I said, just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. And there's some inspiration there for those people and those guests. Okay, on the podcast today, I have Carl Cavers, Chief Executive Officer, and David Wilton, Chief Financial Officer of Sumo Group, that's S-U-M-O, one of the UK's largest providers of creative and development services to the video games and entertainment industries, and they provide, they go over some of the highlights from their final results this year. Also on the podcast, Alan Green talks about Feedback, FDBK, Prairie Mining, PDZ, and Powerhouse Energy, PHE, and also talks about dragapp.com. Plus, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, Codal Minerals, KOD, and Blue Jay Mining, JAY. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Carl Cavers, Chief Executive Officer, and David Wilton, Chief Financial Officer of Sumo Group. That's S-U-M-O. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Morning.
Now, you've got a bit of news out. We've had a bit of news out of late, the final results for 2017, and we'll get into the details of that and the highlights in a bit. Before we do, for people listening who are not aware of what the Sumo Group is all about, could you summarise, please?
So predominantly, we're a co-development partner to some of the world's largest video game publishers, both doing turnkey and co-development work. And we've probably worked on a lot of the titles your audience would be aware of. Sega and Sonic All-Stars Racing, Sega and Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed, Virtua Tennis, Little Big Planet 3 for Sony, Outrun. We did Doctor Who for the BBC a few years ago. And got a wonderful BAFTA. So we're very well known for our products, but we're not always very well recognised.
Yeah, and first and foremost, we all know that it's a burgeoning sort of industry. It's a massively hot sector. But I assume because of that, it attracts a lot of companies, does it, or not?
It's a very high barrier to entry in the environment that we're in. It is a hot sector. Mobile is obviously a big part of the video game industry with a lower barrier to entry. But we focus on premium video games and experiences on consoles, so PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo Switch, and the PC. And we can have teams of over 100 people working on these products at times. So it's not an easy industry to break into if it's something you chose to do.
Yeah, and I suppose when you are sort of, a multi-award-winning company, you end up sort of being the go-to choice, don't you?
We do. We believe we've built an enviable reputation worldwide with our clients and partners. You know, we've been working with some of our partners for 15 years and establishing long-term relationships and also have the benefit of long-term revenue visibility because we have long-term contracts. Video game development can take anything from 12 months to 4 years, and it's a great stable position for us to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, you've released your final results for the year ended the 31st of December 2017. Take us through some of the highlights if you could.
Okay, thank you. The the results are fairly complex, but the thing to focus on is the underlying results are very good. So we're very pleased with the 40% increase in revenue and the 38% increase in adjusted EBITDA we've achieved. We're reporting 8.4 million relative to a market expectation when we did the IPO in December of 8 million. I have to sort of apologise for the fact that our results are very complex. So in the audited accounts, the prior year is actually a 4-month period from a previous change of ownership. And then if you look at the numbers themselves, you have to separate out the underlying results, which are very good, from all the consequences, firstly, of being private equity owned for 355 days of the year. And therefore, for example, we had very large debt structure and high interest costs, which we no longer have. Mm-hmm. And also the cost of the IPO, which were around £4.5 million in total. So the numbers are quite difficult to follow. But I would encourage people to focus on the underlying performance, which we've summarised on the front page of the results announcement. And we're very pleased with the results. We've also taken the view that, and Carl is quoted as saying, while it's still early in this year, the board already expects to deliver full year results slightly ahead of market expectations. So our broker is publishing a research note which will increase the EBITDA figure projected for 2018. So overall, we're very pleased with the results. They are fairly difficult to understand. The good thing from our point of view is we're now completely ungeared. We have cash in the bank. We have a very strong order book. We have a really exciting prospect ahead of us, and we're very positive about the year.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that, you know, when results are released, of course, they are largely historical. And like I said, if you've got that added level of complexity here, because you say it's a different entity kind of thing, or you were private equity, so it's hard to extrapolate that. But going forward, you seem very confident there, Carl.
So, yeah, I mean, we have a very strong history of good and strong performance. And we see no reason to change our outlook going forward.
And to describe, so your clients, you know, and your business, how it's and the mix between, you say, co-partnerships, and because I'm completely new to this area of, you know, yeah, business. So how does it work? I mean, you obviously do your own work, or and what percentage is the breakdown?
So predominantly we work with partners and on their IP, and that can be in two different ways. It can be in providing some capacity to help on products they need support with, but also it can be with taking the whole game project, so from the original idea through to the final delivery of the Goal Master, and being responsible for every different aspect of delivery of that product.
Yeah, yeah.
In addition to that, we do also self-published our own game, which we released in 2017, a game called Snake Pass. But it represents a relatively small part of our revenue. But it does give our team at Sumo a great creative outlet for working on something original.
Yeah, and is there going to be more of that? I mean, obviously, it has to pay financially. But I mean, do you see yourselves? Or do you limit yourself to the amount of own stuff you do, or will there be more of that in the future?
We'll limit the amount that we do, because we're not in the business of taking principal risk on mm-hmm. products.
Yeah.
However, where we believe we've got a great commercial idea, we will look to bring that to market. But we're talking about very modest investments here. Nowhere near the amount of budget that one of our clients would spend with us on a project. Mm-hmm. But we do have plans to do more. Snake Pass has been a tremendous success for us, and we'll look to do more in 2019.
Yeah, and I shouldn't think the video game industry is shrinking, is it?
No, it is a growing market, and it's a very exciting market. I think what a lot of people don't realise is the average age of a gamer, the demographic now is mid-30s.
Yeah.
People don't stop playing video games as they get older. So the whole market has grown in terms of its audience. But then also the amount of content that you need to produce a AAA video game these days is huge. Mm. Which is why we have such large teams working on games for such long periods.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, if someone is listening to this, Carl, and likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
So, we are a growth company. We always have been. We have a great track record of delivering, which is why we came to market. And we're serving a strong market. The video game industry is estimated in excess of $100 billion each year, And we take up a very small part of that at the moment.
Excellent stuff, guys. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Super. Thanks, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Join Al.
I'm very good, Just. Nice sunny morning in Seaford, and it seems like only yesterday that we spoke.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, yeah, we did actually speak yesterday. Then some news dropped today on stocks that we have a mutual interest in. So let's come back on. Let's revise that. So,
absolutely.
And one of those stocks, and to me, this is the holy grail of microcap companies. You know, it's when a small cap signs with a massive global leader. And this has happened today with Feedback, hasn't it?
It has. Just to recap on Feedback, as listeners will know, we've talked about this for a long time. I have a shareholding in Feedback, and you do too.
Me too,
So the company has two arms. It has Texrad, which is a medical imaging piece of software that scans archive images of X-rays and other images, and it can help identify conditions that might not otherwise be picked up by the naked eye. Hugely successful. It's been marketed all over the world by the scientific director Balaji Ganesan, and some restructuring and an overhang in the share price has weighed on the shares up to recently. But we've always known that the company has already sort of done deals with various majors around the world in the past. But with the restructuring now complete, a new board in place, and some big hitters on the board as well, in regards to David Crabb.
Simon Sturge. Yeah, I wrote a blog on the weekend just highlighting his connections, because Simon Sturge is with Merck, and Merck is also a big healthcare company, you know, turning over 15 billion euros in Europe. And the fact that he'd come on, bought sort of, I read about 75 grand worth of shares at the placing price, that is, but today's prices are obviously worth a lot more. And certain things going on. The directors are taking, you know, a part in the placing. There's certain alignments there going on. Their product, like you say, has had so many sort of positive peer reviews and academic papers written on it compared to competition. I think it's best in class, pretty much. And like you said before we came on, it's only a matter of time, really. If you look at the board's connections as well, I mean, the chairman at XGE as well, and Tim Irish's connections there with GE.
Tim Irish as well,
yeah. So it was only a matter of time, having a good product and excellent connections with excellent track record of board, that I think something like this is going to come along. Obviously, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but this, like I said, is the holy grail. You know, a massive company.
GE Healthcare, they don't get much bigger than this. A deal with GE Healthcare for a tiny microcap company like Feedback is groundbreaking, and it's transformational. But this is just the first. You know, there are so many companies that want to use Texrad, and of course they have the CE mark for Texrad lung, and there are indications from the company when this happened last year that there'll be other CE marks to follow. So we are right at the start of the evolutionary curve for this company. But of course they had to get all their ducks in a row first. They've got the board in place now. Now they're starting to sign these deals, and you know where we are now, as you said just now, sub 10 million market cap against companies that are worth merely have market caps of multiple billions. They're now signing deals regularly with companies of this size. So it's a very exciting time, and you know, you and I are invested, Jess, and many others are too. So it's a very exciting time indeed for Feedback shareholders.
Yeah, and I think a lot of time people say, "Oh, you know, I do have a sort of policy of almost selling half by double on a stock." But you have to look at you have to keep reevaluating. Like you said, it's not even 10 million market cap. Now, this is a non-exclusive global rights deal with GE. Now, people think, why is that? Well, listen, that means they can do other deals with companies like Alliance Medical. And Alliance Medical, you know, are responsible for more than 50% of all NHS PET CT scans in Europe. And so that is massive. Now, GE has obviously done their due diligence, and to a certain extent, Alliance will know about this. Alliance are working already with it. They have the Feedback software anyway in research environments and all that. Anyway, so they'll realise, if GE's going ahead with this, they'll know about it. It'll maybe give them a kick as well and think, okay, let's go forward. Let's move forward with this, because, you know, GE are not going to deal with anyone less than best in class. You know, they don't sign a deal with someone who hasn't got a product that's very good. So it's almost like they're doing due diligence for everyone else. So I think you're right. In fact, this is probably the first of many we'll see. It's they've got that CE mark back in November, which means they can commercialize it. And there's other bits, like you said. There's not only lung. There's liver. There's brain. There's all kinds of software rollouts. So yeah.
Plus, of course, with flying brands, it's TextRad is used under license for kidney stones as well. It's part of the stone checker offering. So you know, it's licensed out in so many different ways that there's this broad spread of income that the company will recognize going forward. But if you look at it, look at where feedback is right now, you know, this has got to be a company that the likes of GE, Siemens and others are going to be looking at and saying, we've got to have this as part of our portfolio. So it also brings into question the fact, is this company going to get taken out at some point? And you've got to say, well, that there is a likelihood of that. That clearly, you know, that's we're a long way from that. But where the company is now, the sort of companies it's doing deals with, it does indicate to me very much so that one of the big players is going to come in and want to add feedback into its arsenal of medical products going forward. So and of course, if that happens with the CE mark and, you know, the broad spread of clients' feedback already has, you know, it's going to be paying top dollar. So, you know, it's just a very exciting time right now for shareholders and feedback. So delighted.
Yeah, and I remember Chairman, you know, Alistair Riddell saying the CE mark for TextRad Lung was very much ploughing a field, a furrow there, and, you know, and starting. That was the first time we've ever done that. And now we've done it with CE Lung. We know exactly what's needed and how much work needs to go into it. It'll be a lot easier now to create CE marks for other parts, like you said, liver, lung, whatever, and all that stuff, brain. And so they'll have many arms. But yeah, you've got to look at, you know, if you take all this into account and realize it's still a sub 10 million market cap, that is nothing for someone like GE just to buy up, and, you know, if they want to. I mean, that's a drop in the ocean for them, so it's ridiculous. So, and it will be at a premium, of course. So, we're speculating here, but do some research. I've written three blogs.
We are speculating. Mm. Do your own research. Shares go down as well as up. But I think, you know, as a prospect for the future, you know, this is a very bright prospect indeed. And, it's great that things are finally starting to move forward for this company.
Marvellous stuff. Right, anything else, Al?
I do have a few other things to talk about. Yes, indeed. So, also announced this morning, Prairie Mining, epicode PDZ. Now, Prairie Mining, just to remind listeners, we've spoken numerous times about Prairie. They have two coking coal projects in Poland. They have the Debiensko mine and the Jankarski mine. And the Jankarski mine is rated to be the highest quality coking coal asset in the Northern Hemisphere, so that's no mean statement. But in the process of reactivating the mines, the Polish government currently imports all its coking coal and has said that it's very keen to reactivate the domestic mining industry and get things going again. Mm-hmm. And clearly, that puts Prairie in pole position with both these quality mining assets. There was a hiccup, but it was just one of a number of hiccups in what is a very long and protracted process, where the Ministry of Environment failed to complete a survey and release approve data within the allotted time. So what it meant was that effectively Prairie's concession over Jankarski went back on the open market, and Prairie basically said, well, we can't let this happen. So they took legal advice and they were advised to sue the MOE for failure to complete within the allotted time. And today the Polish Civil Court has ruled in Prairie's favour and said, no, you know, it's not right. This should have been completed. It's created an injunction preventing the Ministry of Environment from granting these concessions or any other form of agreement with any other party until the process is concluded. So basically, Prairie said at the time, you know, this has happened before. We've had these issues before. It's a long and protracted process. So this is the latest little bump in the road that Prairie has overcome, and it's business as usual. So you've got these two huge mining assets in Poland, which are worth some three and a half billion sterling, with long mine lives, support from the local community to redevelop them, and obviously an incumbent government that are very keen to see these mines up and running again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's had a nice rise, didn't it? It came back on that legal issue, and now it's hopefully we'll start to see, you know, a gradual gain again on that. So,
well, if we go about, I mean, just look at some of the research.
In fact, you know what? Sorry, Alice, yeah. So just looking at the chart there, it's just above now. It went below the 200-day moving average. Now it's just peaked above that again. So it's always a, you know, a bullish sign, you know.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think also what you have to take into account is that you know, the it is a long and protracted process. But the research notes that have been written about Prairie very much took that into account. And particularly, there was one written by Align Research, which looked at all of the process that Prairie had to go through to get these mines reactivated, and came in with a conviction buy rating and a very conservative valuation of 118 pence. And of course, where we are now, we're a long way off that, and as these the procedures are ticked off, as they go through each stage, getting towards reactivating and redeveloping the mines, we can expect to see the share price, or where it is now, close the gap towards 118 pence. I also declare interest. I have shares in Prairie as well, so you know, that's I'm declaring my interest there. So, but again, you know, we're at a very exciting juncture here. This is going to take some time to come to fruition, but it's a work in progress, and a huge underlying asset to support the valuation.
Okay, marvellous. Anything else, Al?
Yes, wanted to talk about Powerhouse Energy. Now I was at the UK Investor Show on Saturday, which was absolutely rammed. It was great to see so many investors there, and unlike previous years where you have a lull in proceedings and things quiet down, it was the stands were just chock full the whole time, loads of investors milling around, and also the conference centre downstairs was also full to listen to the speakers there. So it was a great show, and well done to UK Investor for what I think has been the most successful investment show in recent years. So we're also doing a bit of work with Powerhouse Energy, and this company has really jumped across a few hurdles itself of late. But it is Powerhouse Energy have a process where they can take waste plastic products and tires and convert them into a pure stream of hydrogen, which can then be used to power fuel cells and all the rest of it. In fact, Powerhouse are the only company in the UK to use non-recyclable plastics to incinerate. Well, incinerate is the wrong word. It just vaporizes these the plastic and produces the hydrogen gas. The company have struck a number of deals recently with Wrightbus to produce or to supply the hydrogen for the hydrogen cells that power these buses. There are EU grants. The EU have made grants available to cities throughout Europe to replace the aging and, you know, polluting bus fleets that they run. That they provided a €200,000 grant for each bus that's bought that's powered by hydrogen fuel cells. And the most recent deal that Powerhouse struck was with Trestle Biofuels, which was a leading it's an energy project developer in Romania. And they have created a special purchase vehicle, which is owned by Powerhouse Energy, Waste Electricity, and by Tresoil, to develop the technology to supply buses in cities, initially in Bulgaria and Romania. And this is a big step forward for the company. Added to which, of course, last week the company raised 900,000 sterling gross to as a funding exercise. And what was significant, the shares are currently trading at 0.554p. What was significant here is that the share price barely moved, and that to me is a very good sign. If you have a placing and a raising, you know, often if a company has a story and it's a long burn story, then you'll see a drop in the share price that takes into account the dilution from that raising. Not so here. barely a flicker, and that to me says that, you know, we're at a great inflection point in terms of valuation, and I think we can expect to see the company progress from here, and we'll see more deals in the pipeline to follow the Tresor deal.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they are, it's cutting edge technology, and you know, it's a solution to two big issues. That's waste, gets rid of it, and creates clean fuel. And if they crack that and commercialize that, who knows where it could go? I mean, at the moment, they're on the edge of that commercialization, you know, and that's why they've hired that commercial operations guy. But just think the potential there is huge if they land that deal they're looking for, the commercialized deal. It's, you know, it'll go bonkers, I think. But do your own research. It's cutting edge, you know, so there we are.
Indeed. So. Well, this is, that was also one of the things I wanted to mention on Powerhouse. They appointed Bruce Nicholson, not Bruce Springsteen, by the way, but Bruce is a musician. That's a sign. I had a chat with him at the pub a few weeks ago. But Bruce has got a tremendous pedigree. He's been project manager with multinationals such as ThyssenKrupp, EDF Tullowoil, BHP Billiton, and others. And he's joined Powerhouse as the commercial operations manager, overseeing the development. And you know, you just look at where Powerhouse is right now. It's put the team in place. It's had a very successful oversubscribed fundraising last week, and these commercial deals are starting to roll. So, plus, you know, with that fundraising, you know, there was barely a flicker when the funds were raised and the additional shares were issued. So that's, you know, that to me says that we're, again, you know, like feedback, we're at a very exciting inflection point, and I think we can see and expect shares to press on from here.
Marvellous. Anything else, Al, or is that it?
Just very quickly, wanted to talk about, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about DragApp, basically what DragApp does, it organizes your inbox into a complete CRM module, and you, while we were talking, you had your Gmail open, you opened DragApp and dragged it in, and it just formatted the mailbox for you. Now, this is DragApp, since its launch a year or so ago, has grown hugely. It's got nearly 33,000 users, and now well over 200 countries, more than 500 users joining every day, and it's used by Uber, Airbnb, Spotify, and Netflix, who've all installed it. The company are raising $600,000 to accelerate this development, and when you think that they currently spend, for every $30 they spend on marketing, they get $36 back, that's a great metric to bear in mind if you're considering investing. We're currently working with them. They have the funds are being raised by a company called Sentient Capital, and if you go to branduk.net, look for the growth company multi-channel link at the top on the toolbar, you can see the DragApp page and you can find out, and if you want to sign up and receive investment documents, you can do from that page.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the things, if you are involved in like I said, project work a lot and you rely on emails but you find your emails are getting lost, this, right, or you have to do searches all the time, it does, you don't have to do that. You just basically convert it. It's a very easy tick box that converts it back to your normal Gmail, and just on and off, switch it on and off button, and then you can arrange it in that way. Sorry, I'm stuck in my throat here. It's really tickling my throat, but give it a go. It's easy to install and easy to disable as well. Just one switch for a button, so it's easy to use. But definitely, if you do use email for projects, then it's worth a try. Marvellous, yeah. Al. Thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Thanks, Jess. Yeah, that's great. Speak next week.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're all right, John.
Yes, thank you. Good to be on again.
I hope you don't mind. I took a screenshot of a part of your email today that I get to my inbox, talking about the copper deficit, or the Escondida sort of talks that are breaking down, and and the threat of the sort of copper supply. So I find that very interesting, and it's worth subscribing, I think, to your email, because there's a lot of stuff in there. But what I'm saying is, John, I'm sorry, but I screenshotted it and tweeted it out, but I did give you a credit. All right.
Well, we've always been happy to share our thoughts and our knowledge with the market in general. And we are now sharing that with increasing numbers of people, because the rules appear to be vastly relaxed on who we're allowed to send our work to. So if anybody is interested, please contact us directly.
Yeah, but didn't that happen last year, the problems with the unions and wage negotiation, or what?
This, we see this almost every year. at the beginning of the year, the industry gets together. They all say that they're going to produce lots of copper. And then the big guys that forecast copper for the big consultancies, they then say, oh, look, there's going to be a surplus of copper by the end of the year and the price should go down. What then happens is you get production issues around the world. You maybe get a stoppage in Indonesia at Grasberg. Or as we see, you get unions kicking up a bit of trouble in Chile at Escondida. And suddenly people start to take bits of production out of their forecasts for the copper market. And lo and behold, that surplus starts to turn into a deficit forecast. And everybody then starts to worry about whether there'll be enough copper to go around and the price goes back up again. So it feels like we see it every year. It doesn't absolutely happen that way every year, but the forecasters always seem to be more pessimistic and then they have to change their view, which is just the way the world works.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, and talking about copper, I see that after a long time, it's taken a while, but the GEO share price, Georgian Mining share price, is bottomed out and it's starting to make a nice sort of upward move now, isn't it? So it's gone from, it hits like, almost touched 8p at one point, now it's at 14, so it is re-rating a little bit there.
Well, yeah, sadly, there were sellers in the market. We don't know what was inspiring those sellers, but it did feel to many people as if they were following the lack of news flow that was coming out as the company negotiated with the Russian joint venture partner. It now appears that the Russian joint venture partner now seems to be playing ball. We think the problems were that they didn't have the cash that they needed to maintain their joint venture stake, and they will get diluted down in the joint venture if Georgian spends more money than they do. So it's a traditional 50-50 joint venture, and they didn't want to be diluted because they too can see that this is very valuable. And more to the point, it's more valuable to them because their mine next door, the Madnuli mine, has essentially run out of decent quality ore to feed the processing plant. So they've got mouths to feed, hundreds of workers at site who they have to pay wages to, and they're not getting the cash flow from the ore that they've got. So they really need the Georgian mining mine, the Kavemo Bolnesi mine, to be up and running and feeding their plant. The problem is they're not that keen to spend the money to help the Georgian people put it all into action. Now, it won't cost very much. There's a little bit of drilling work to do just to prove up the gold oxide cap, but you need to do it in order to ensure that you've got the right mine scheduling in place, and then you just employ some local contractors, and we understand that contractors in Georgia are probably the cheapest in Eastern Europe because there hasn't been enough work for any of these people to do, and the Georgian mining is keen to get on with it, so they ought to be starting to start moving gold oxide ore certainly this year and probably before the end of the summer. They'll do a bit of drilling before that, and in the meantime they'll carry on drilling to prove up the value of the larger copper resource that's underneath. And that's what we're really excited about, is this going to be worth $100 million, $200 million, $500 million at the end of the day? And how much copper and what grade is that going to be?
Yeah. And like you say, and copper's a good place to be, good space to be in at the moment. And you also mentioned, actually, I mean, I don't know if you saw this, another one you've covered in the past, but Codal talking about lithium, another hot space to be in. They announced a bit of an update, so more of the same, but they did announce they're going to be in a position to release a JORC resource just after the summer, which is quite nice, I think, isn't it?
Yes, no, we're looking forward to that. The company could have commissioned the work for a JORC resource earlier in the year or even last year. It didn't do that because there's not much point in putting out a sort of half-scale resource. People who are following the lithium market, they want to see something that can be shown to be economic. We know the quality, or we believe the quality of the lithium in spodumene is good. In fact, we've got samples of it in the office here, and it looks very nice. But the important thing is to verify that when that goes into a furnace in China, that it's exactly what they're looking for. And the Chinese guys have already run tests on this. We've met the Chinese joint venture partners They have expressed to us that this is the kind of material that they like. It doesn't have much mica in it, therefore it doesn't produce much dust, and that is good from an energy efficiency perspective, and it also keeps the dust levels down, which is good from an environmental perspective, and also for generally anybody who works in that operating environment. You simply don't want dust blowing around all over the place from a health perspective. So they recognize that, they like the project, and we hope that they will continue to support and fund that project going forwards. And in the meantime, Kodal has updated us just to say that they continue to do the drilling, they continue to create that bulk sample, and that bulk sample some of that is being tested in China, and some of that is being tested in Australia to verify the exact nature of what they've got.
Yeah, but like I said, they've done tests already, which seemed to come back very positive. So, it'd be good to get... Cause at the moment, I mean, I think that's the trouble. That, you know, there was this early sort of jump into this. A lot of private investors jumped in, a lot of traders jumped in, and the share price rocketed, almost went up. I think it was 0.5 at one point, now it's 0.16. But it's drifted slowly lower and lower, and yet the story is developing, and that jump in share price was before they brought on this Chinese investor who ploughed in about £5 million. And so even though they're more advanced now, the stock is cheaper. So it's really odd that this is happening. So hopefully...
Well, sadly... I mean, we're all momentum traders at heart, and the lithium market did take a bit of a knock when the big Chilean miners when the limits were taken off their production by the government, and they will now go ahead with expansion plans. The problem in Chile is nobody knows who's going to fund all these plans, and there's a lot of negotiation going on at the moment as to who exactly is going to expand production, how they're going to fund that expansion, and what government incentives there might be, etc., etc. So nothing is ever as simple as it looks. Mm-hmm. And I suspect those lithium producers in Chile are not rushing at this. It serves them in many respects to keep the market tight, to keep the market waiting for increased supply. And that's good for companies like Kodal, because it means that they can move more quickly and get involved in the market while it's still possible to get established.
Yeah, and like I said, they are a 10 million market cap, which is there's room for improvement there, isn't it? With that joke resource coming out, so we'll see. All right, and another one of your stocks, Blue Jay, came out with a bit of an impressive set of numbers this week, didn't they?
Well, it's a good scale resource. It's nearly up at it's getting on towards 100 million tons. What is impressive is the grade. Now, the grade of this resource was slightly lower than the last grade that they published, but don't worry about that, because it's still very, very high ilmenite grade. And the key here is that certainly in the first few years, and probably the first 10 years in my view, they will be mining amazingly high grades of ilmenite, higher than the resource numbers would suggest, because you don't need the 100 million tons to start with. That's just a huge number. But they have this particular deposit called Italac, which I haven't done enough work on yet. But the grades there are showing an absolutely staggering 77% in some places of ilmenite. Now, this is completely unprecedented to anyone's knowledge. I've been there. We had to take a helicopter, an old Vietnam Huey, to get out to the site and had a walk across the delta area. The sand is so heavy, this ilmenite titanium mineral sand, it's so heavy you can walk across the entire delta and you barely leave a footprint in it, which I would defy anyone to do that in any delta area around the UK. But this material is so dense that you could pick it up in a bucket and you feel really how heavy that is, because it has been naturally concentrated by erosion and by the sea into this particular area to produce this amazingly high-grade material. What we really need is confirmation of how much there is and what the average grade of that can be. And unfortunately, at the moment, all the experts are so confounded by it that I think they dare not say actually what they really think. So it's an interesting situation. It's a very exciting situation for the company to be in. And I think it's something that the major companies are going to, they're just not going to be able to ignore this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. That's J, ticker J-A-Y. John, thanks for your update as always, and hopefully we'll catch up next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, it's Immu Pharma. That is I-M-M. Of course, I don't know why I lost my thread there. At four, it's Redex. That's Redex Pharma, R-E-D-X. At three, it is Angus Energy, on the podcast yesterday, of course, A-N-G-S. At two, it's Jersey Oil and Gas, JOG. And number one most followed, not surprising, I wrote a blog about these in the weekend, well-timed, because obviously sent a major contract today with GE Healthcare, as I chatted with Alan Green earlier on. That's massive, you know, this is a holy grail of all contracts, a tiny microcap signing with a multi-billion dollar company. And that's FDBK, and still worth doing research on this. It's moved quite a lot today, 50% as I'm looking now. But if you look at it, the market cap is still sub 8 million market cap, and they've been, you know, hooked up with Allianz, as I mentioned. Listen, do your own research, please. Okay, here are the top five most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At five, boohoo.com, PLC. That's a boo sticker there. Final results. I'm very impressive again, apparently. At four, NCondesi Energy. That's NCCL Project Update. At four, N4 Pharma. N4P sticker there. That's final results. At three, or two, sorry. I do hold these two stocks, actually. It's Valrix. EU patent grant for therapeutic compound Val-201. And number one, most liked RNS, no surprise, Feedback PLC, distribution agreement with GE Healthcare. Check it out. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.